All right, Joshua 13, we go to verse 1. Now Joshua was old. Oh no, not another great man of God going to die on us. He was stricken in years. And the Lord said unto him, hey, you're old. You're stricken in years. But, and here's the bad part. There remains yet very much land to be possessed. They were taking their time. Verse 13. Nevertheless, the children of Israel expelled not the Geshurites. They didn't expel the Machachites, those guys. But they dwelt among the Israelites until this day. Verse 14. Only unto the tribe of Levi he gave none inheritance. The sacrifices of the Lord God of Israel made by fire are their inheritance, as he said unto them. Now, the reason I'm picking and choosing these verses is because they're major points that are going to affect things as we go along. All right, let's do ages. Caleb was 85 years old when he finally got his inheritance. We're 5 years into the promised land. When they finally get into the promised land, Caleb is going to request the land of the Anakims. The Anakims were the giants. They're the ones that, the people, they're so large. They're all giants. They all play basketball all the time. They're huge. We can't take them. The giants lived there. And here's Caleb is going, and we'll read this here in a moment. Caleb requests the land of the giants that had so terrified the people 45 years later. He had to spend 40 years in the desert waiting for all those other people to die so he could finally get back into the promised land, which he could have been there for 40 years, setting up an inheritance for his family.
Is that what he wanted?
Exactly. Yeah, let's read it. Oh, yeah. Let's read it. Caleb, let's read this. You talk about a bad dude. All right, 14:5. And the Lord commanded Moses. Joshua 14:5. And the Lord commanded Moses, so the children of Israel did, and they divided the land, because that's what he told Moses to do. The children of Judah came to Joshua and Gilgal, and Caleb, remember he was one of the heads of Judah, he said, thou knowest the thing that the Lord said unto Moses, the man of God, concerning me, back in Kadesh Barnea. 40 years old was I when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to spy out the land. And I brought him word again as it was in my heart. Nevertheless, my brethren that went up with me made the heart of the people melt, but I wholly followed the Lord my God. And Moses swore on that day, saying, surely the land wherein thy feet has trodden shall be your inheritance, and your children's forever, because thou hast wholly followed the Lord thy God. And now, behold, the Lord has kept me alive, and he has said, these 45 years, even since the Lord spake this word unto Moses, while the children of Israel wandered in the wilderness, and now, lo, I am this day 85 years old. As yet I am as strong this day as I was in the day when Moses sent me. As my strength was then, even so my strength is now. For war, both to go out and to come in. I don't think you want to mess with Caleb here. All right. And therefore, I want this mountain. Give me this mountain whereof the Lord spake in that day. For thou heardest in that day how the Anakims were there, and that the cities were great and fenced. If so be the Lord will be with me, that I shall be able to drive them out, as the Lord said. And Joshua blessed him. And he gave unto Caleb, the son of Jephthah, Hebron, for an inheritance. Hebron, therefore, became the inheritance of Caleb, until this day, because he wholly followed the Lord God of Israel. And the name of Hebron before was Kirjatharbar, which Arba was a great man among the Anakims, and the land had rest from war. All right, so, Caleb, I'm 85, but you want to mess with me? I'm just as surprised I was when I was 40. And you know what I want? I want the land of the giants. That's my inheritance. I'm not going to freak out. We're going to take them. Now look at in your syllabus. Enoch's father was Arba. He was the original builder of Hebron. These people were great, they were mighty, they were tall. Evidently, they would instill great fear, and they did in 10 of the spies. Goliath is a descendant of this race of people. All right, Deuteronomy 9:2, that's in your syllabus. Julie will read that for us since it's in the syllabus.
A people great and tall, the children of Anakim, whom thou know and whom thou hast heard, who can stand before the children of Anakim?
Who can stand? They're all huge. They're twice as big as me. All right, back to Joshua 15. So those people were great and tall. Joshua 15, 13 and 14. Now that's not in your syllabus, is it? Okay, so then Richard Vance will read Joshua 15, 13, and 14 to us. Because we're going to take out the giants, the children of Anak.
And unto Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, he gave a part among the children of Judah, according to the commandment of the Lord to Joshua, even the city of Arba, the father of Anak, which city is Hebron. And Caleb drove thence the three sons of Anak, Sheshai, and Ahiman, and Talmai, the children of Anak.
So they were... You know, there are three families worth of giants now that he went in after. Not just the one. Now, Og, you know how we've been talking about Sahan and Og and how it was a big deal? Og, the king of Bashan, he was a descendant of the giants. Deuteronomy 3:11. For only Og, king of Bashan, this is in the 40th year, last year of Moses' life, they're getting ready to get on the move and they defeat Og. For only Og, king of Bashan, remained of the remnant of giants. Behold his bedstead. His bedstead, people think, it's either his bed, a couch, or his tomb. I think it's his tomb. Because it's his tomb, if it was his bed, he's really big. It was a bedstead of iron. Is it not in Rabbath, the children of Ammon? It's 9 cubits. All right, the Egyptian cubit was 20.62 inches. And Moses, if he used that cubit, since he was raised in Egypt, he'd be familiar with it. That means... It was 15, almost 15 and a half feet long. That's a pretty big bed. Or a tomb. That's why I think it's more of a tomb. Or, you know, it's also translated couch. 15 and a half feet was the length. And it was almost 7 feet wide after the cubic of a man. That's a big person. All right, 1 Samuel 17:4. And there went on a champion of the army of the Philistines named Goliath of Gath. He was 6 cubits in a span. Using the same measurement, that meant he was over 10 feet tall. So when we're talking about giants, we're talking about literally giant people compared to most people of that day and time. And I don't have the stats as how big they were back then. I don't know if the average people were 5'2 or 6'2, but they weren't 10 feet tall. But they were scared to death of the land of the giants. And what is Caleb going? I want them. They cost me 40 years. I want them. Look at Deuteronomy 2, 10 and 11. The Emans dwelt there in times past, and they were a great people. There were many of them, and they were tall, just like the Anakims, which also accounted giants as the Anakims. But the Moabites called them Emans for some reason. So, all right. And in Deuteronomy 2, 21... A people great and many and tall as the Anakims. But the Lord destroyed them before them, and they succeeded them and dwelt in their stead. So, I wanted to point out that Caleb, he was a mighty man 40 years earlier. And finally, when he gets his shot, he doesn't go, you know, I'll take the land of the pygmies. You know, I'll take over there where all the short people live. I want the land of the giants. You know, at 85, come on. I'm just as strong today as I was then. All right, Joshua 20. So basically the middle parts of Joshua are dividing up the land, the inheritance, and now we get to Joshua 20. All right, verse 1. And the Lord spake unto Joshua, speak to the children of Israel, saying, appoint out for you cities of refuge, whereof I spake unto you by the hand of Moses, that the slayer that kills any person unawares and unwittingly may flee thither, and they shall be your refuge from the avenger of blood. So you're sitting in a bar, you're having a few drinks, and you get in a fight with somebody and you kill them. You didn't do it premeditated, it was an accident, you could run and live in the city of refuge. That's what it's saying. And when he that doth flee into one of those cities shall stand at the entering of the gate of the city, and shall declare his cause in the ears of the elders that day. You can't just show up. You have to explain what happened to the elders, and they have to let you in. Or they can all go, nah, I don't think so. That's right. It was premeditated. You don't deserve to be here. Because according to the law, the brother would come looking for you. Right? So if something happens to Ed, then his brother would come to avenge him. That's how the law read. But if you were in a city of refuge, for a genuine reason, you were safe there. As long as you stayed in the city of refuge. Until the high priest died. It's another variable that we'll look at here in a moment. All right. So, when he that doth flee into one of these cities shall stand at the entering of the gate of the city, shall declare his cause in the ears of the elders of that city, they shall take him into the city unto him, and give him a place, and he may dwell among them. And if the avenger of blood pursue after him, right, that's a near relative, then they shall not deliver the slayer up into his hand, because he smote his neighbor unwittingly, and hated him not before time. Wasn't premeditated. And he shall dwell in that city until he stand before the congregation for judgment, and until the death of the high priest that shall be in those days. Then shall the slayer return and come unto his own city and his own house and unto the city from whence he fled. So the slayer, the one, the avenger, the one who's going after him, has to go back. Can't go into the city of refuge because it was done, not premeditated, it was an accident. One of the things that we're not going to read about is all the jails and prisons that were in Israel. There weren't any, because justice was swift. It was an eye for an eye. It was laid out. You get caught stealing something, you give it back fourfold. You don't have the money, you're sold in slavery. It's that simple. So justice was quick. They didn't have all the jails and all that. They had the cities of refuge in case something happened accidentally. But if it happened premeditated, the law said life for a life. Some of the cities of refuge were Kadesh, which is up in Galilee. Hebron was a city of refuge. Shechem was a city of refuge. Bezer, which was on the other side of the city of Jordan, was a city of refuge. They were all interspersed throughout the land. So there were different cities laid out systematically. It wasn't like there was just one. It was in all the different areas that you could go to if you had to. Now, chapter 21 is going to deal with the priests and the Levites, where they were supposed to live. Because remember, they're not getting an inheritance. All the other tribes got inheritance, but the tribe of Levi, they were to do the Lord's service. They didn't get it, along with the priest. All right, Joshua 21, 1, 2, 3. And Luann, if you could read those for us, please.
Then came near the heads of the fathers of the Levites unto Eleazar the priest, and unto Joshua the son of Nun, and unto the heads of the fathers of the tribes of the children of Israel. And they spake unto them at Shiloh in the land of Canaan, saying, The Lord commanded by the hand of Moses to give us cities to dwell in, with the suburbs thereof for our cattle.
Okay, suburbs, we think of, suburbs. You know, you live out, not in the city, you're out in the suburbs. You know, you get your 2.3 children, your nice two-level house with your white picket fence. That's not what it's talking about. It's the pasture lands. It means pasture lands. Okay.
And the children of Israel gave unto the Levites out of their inheritance at the commandment of the Lord these cities and their suburbs.
Right, so they got their pasture lands too. Now, chapter 22 of Joshua. So they, basically, the Levites were put all over the place because they were supposed to learn the word and teach the people. So that's, you'd want them all interspersed everywhere. That's what they were supposed to do. Now, chapter 22 of Joshua deals with the tribes whose inheritance is on the other side of Jordan. Remember Reuben and Gad and half of Manasseh stayed on the other side of the Jordan River. Now, they had been there fighting, and now Joshua's going to allow them to go home. When they get there, they're very thankful, and since they're on the other side of the Jordan River, they decide to build an altar. According to the law, you're not supposed to do that. So, according to the law, you're supposed to put idolatry totally out of the land. So all the other nations are going to, all the other tribes are going to rise up and attack the Reubenites and the Gadites and half of Manasseh because they built this altar over there. So now we got a big civil war about to happen. Well, let's see what happens. Joshua 22, 1-10. Then Joshua called the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half-tribe of Manasseh, and he said to them, You have kept all that Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded you. You have obeyed my voice in all that I have commanded you. You have not left your brethren these many days unto this day, but you have kept the charge of the commandment of the Lord your God. And now the Lord your God has given rest unto your brethren, as he promised them. Therefore, now return you, and get you into your tents, and unto the land of your possession, which Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave you, on the other side of Jordan. But take diligent heed to do the commandment and the law, which Moses, the servant of the Lord, charged you, to love the Lord your God, to walk in all his ways, to keep his commandments, and to cleave unto him and to serve him with all your heart, with all your soul. So Joshua blessed them and sent them away, and they went unto their tents. Now to the one half of the tribe of Manasseh, Moses had given a possession in Bashan, but unto the other half thereof gave Joshua among the brethren on this side of Jordan westward. And when Joshua sent them away unto their tents, that he blessed them. If you look at your map, which is in the back of your syllabi, you will see in green that here's the Jordan River, here's Reuben, here's Gad, and here's Manasseh. So he's saying Manasseh, part of the tribe of Manasseh, gets on the east side of Jordan, part of it will be on the west side of Jordan. So that's what he's saying. But all these three now are over on this side of the Jordan. But Manasseh is big enough, and there's enough people. Manasseh was one of the two sons of Joseph, Manasseh and Ephraim. And they were both counted as if they were full, they got full shares, because Joseph kept the children of Israel alive by walking with God back at the time of the famine. So Manasseh is on both sides of the Jordan River. Gad, Reuben. All right. And he said to them, return with much riches unto your tents, and with very much cattle, with silver, with gold, with brass, with iron, and with very much clothing. Divide the spoil of your enemies with your brethren. So basically, they had been there, and as they had taken the nations, the first one went to God, but they had collected quite an inheritance. And he's saying, take it all with you and share it with the people that stayed behind. Because you had to leave some men there to protect people from the marauders and all that were out here. So not all the men of war came across with them, but 40,000 did. So he said, share it with everybody. And that's what they did. All right. And the children of Reuben and the children of Gad and the half-tribe of Manasseh returned and departed from the children of Israel out of Shiloh, which is in the land of Canaan, to go unto the country of Gilead, to the land of their possession, whereof they were, which they had possessed according to the word of the Lord by Moses. All right. And when they came unto the borders of Jordan that are in the land of Canaan, the children of Reuben, the children of Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh built an altar by the Jordan River. Right? A great altar. And like I said, according to law, you weren't supposed to do that. So it caused an uproar, and they went to invade them so they could rid the land of idolatry. And then we jump down to verse 31. Verse 31 says, and Phinehas, who was the son of Eleazar, the priest, Aaron's son was Eleazar, his son was Phinehas, and now we're in the third generation of the high priest. And he had a decree, and he told the children of Reuben and the children of Gad, and he said, this day we perceive that the Lord is among us, because you have not committed this trespass against the Lord. Now you have delivered the children of Israel out of the land of the Lord. And verse 34 is the whole key to the entire thing because of what they called the altar. You ready? Verse 34. And the children of Reuben and the children of Gad called the altar Ed. I had to put that in there. So that's why it was okay, because they called the altar Ed.
Ed.
For it shall be a witness between us that the Lord is God. So that's the whole reason why. But basically, the high priest got involved, and he went in and interviewed them and said, they're okay. Calm down. You know, it's okay. They're doing it for the right reasons. Now we go to chapter 23, verse 1. Now it came to pass a long time after the Lord had given rest unto Israel from all the enemies round about, that Joshua waxed old, and he was stricken in age. Remember, God told him he was getting old. And Joshua called for all Israel. He got the elders together. He got all the heads together. He got the judges. He got the officers. And he said unto everybody, I'm old, and I'm stricken in age. And you have seen all that the Lord your God hath done unto all these nations because of you. For the Lord your God is he that hath fought for you. Behold, I have divided unto you by lot those nations that remain to be an inheritance of your tribes from Jordan with all the nations that I've cut off with the great sea westward. So basically, by Urim and Thurim, it was decided who got what. These guys willingly asked for this area, but everything else, whose land should this be? And the lot fell upon Ephraim, or Benjamin, Manasseh, Zebulun. This land over here was the land that was originally given to Dan. They ended up here, but this was the original land because they didn't do what they were supposed to do. But all of this didn't happen by accident. Right? So that's what he said. And then he tells them, and the Lord your God, he will work with you. He will expel them from before you. He will drive them out of your sight. And you can go in and possess the land that was theirs, as the Lord your God has promised unto you. Be ye therefore very courageous to keep and to do all that's written in the book of the law. What's the exhortation here? Do the word. Study the law. Learn the word. Do the word. You got the Levites there to teach it to you because they're going to be living amongst you. Don't turn aside to the right hand or the left hand. Don't do what the people in the lands are doing. But it takes courage. Remember, be thou courageous. It takes you being courageous to keep and to do all the word of God. It did then, it does today. It takes great courage to stand for God today. Now, verse 7. All right, Matt, 7 through 10 for us, please. It's Joshua 23, 7 through 10.
Okay, it says 22 on there.
It does?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm watching.
It's not supposed to say that. It says 22? I thought it changed that.
No.
All right. It should be 23. No wonder it doesn't make any sense. Okay, Joshua 23, not 22. Okay, my bad. You can stone me.
Fire the printer.
That you came not among these nations, these that remain among you, neither make mention of the name of their gods, nor cause to swear by them, neither serve them, nor bow yourselves unto them, but cleave unto the Lord your God, as ye have done unto this day. For the Lord hath driven out from before you great nations and strong, but as for you, no man hath been able to stand before you unto this day.
All right, now look at the next line. One man of you shall chase 1,000. For the Lord your God, he it is that fights for you as he has promised you. Take good heed, therefore, also unto yourselves. First thing he continues to bring up, love the Lord thy God. Else, if you do in any otherwise go back, and you cleave unto the remnant of these nations, even these that remain among you, and shall make marriages with them, and go in unto them, and they to you, know for certainty. Here it is. Which direction do you want to go? Know for a certainty that the Lord your God will no more drive out any of these nations from before you. They are going to be snares and traps unto you, those scourges in your sides, and thorns in parts of your bodies, until you perish from off this good land which the Lord your God has given you. And behold, this day I am going the way of all the earth. And she's about to die. And you know, in all your hearts and in all your souls, that not one thing hath failed of all the good things which the Lord your God spake concerning you. All are come to pass unto you, and not one thing has failed thereof. Therefore, it shall come to pass that as all good things shall come upon you, which the Lord your God promised you, so shall the Lord bring upon all the evil things, till he has destroyed you from off the good land which the Lord your God hath given you. He's laying it out to them. When you have transgressed the covenant of the Lord your God, which he commanded you, and have gone and served other gods, bowed yourself to them, then shall the anger of the Lord be kindled against you, and you're going to perish quickly from off the good land which he hath given unto you. You have a decision. But if you utterly drive the people out of the land, you won't be tempted to serve their gods, because you won't even know what they are. All right, so Joshua 24, verse 1. Ed, what's happening? The altar, Ed, what's the...
And Joshua gathered all the tribes of Israel to Shechem and called for the elders of Israel and for their heads and for their judges and for their officers, and they presented themselves before God.
All right. They presented themselves before God's representative Joshua. He's the one who stood for God. So they all came to him as if they were standing before God. before Joshua died, he gets all the children of Israel together. He gets all the leaders together. And he brings them to Shechem. Because it's time for a history lesson about God's goodness. The tabernacle was in Shiloh at that time. Shiloh is just north of where Jerusalem is. It's also the town of Ramoth later on, which is where Samuel lived and judged the people from. It's called Shiloh. It's where Yasser Arafat lived in Ramadan. That's the town today. That's where Shiloh was. All right. So that's where the Ark's in Shiloh. Shechem is further away. But Joshua is bringing them not to where the tabernacle is, but he's bringing them to Shechem. Why? Shechem was the first place in the promised land where God had told Abraham that the land was his. So if you bring people to Shechem, Shechem's associated with God's promise to Abraham. It's associated with his covenant to Abraham. Shechem was also the place where Jacob, when he had come back to the land, he told everybody, take the gods and we'll bury them under this oak. And that's what they did. They buried the strange gods there. Shechem is between Mount Ebal and Gerizim, the two mountains, where one signified the blessings of the law, one signified the cursings of the law. And he's standing there going, you want to get blessed? You want to get cursed? So he's got visuals. As it says in Deuteronomy 27. For all of these reasons, Shechem was the most impressive place for Joshua. He's old, he's dying, he's getting everybody together so then he could bring them into the remembrance of the covenant, of the law, and rebuild their commitment to the true God, which by this time was already waning. All right, 2 and 3. Ed, 24, 2 and 3.
And Joshua said unto all the people, thus saith the Lord God of Israel, your fathers dwelt on the other side of the flood in old time, even Timnath.
Terah.
And the father of Abraham and the father of Nahor, they served other gods. And I took your father Abraham from the other side of the flood and led him throughout all the land of Canaan and multiplied his seed and gave him Isaac.
All right, so that's the reason God took Abraham out was because Abraham's father and all those relatives, they were serving other gods. So he chose Abraham and said, you have to move to another land and get away from their idolatrous practices. Because Abraham only had one God. So now, chapter 4, verse 4, we're going to continue the history lesson. So Ed, you give us the history lesson of 4 through 11.
And I gave unto Isaac, Jacob, and Esau, and I gave unto Esau Mount Seir to possess it. But Jacob and his children went down into Egypt. And I sent Moses also and Aaron, and I plagued Egypt according to that which I did among them. And afterward I brought you out, and I brought your fathers out of Egypt, and you came unto the sea. And the Egyptians pursued after your fathers with chariots and horsemen unto the Red Sea. And when they cried unto the Lord, he put darkness between you and the Egyptians, and brought the sea upon them. And covered them, and your eyes have seen what I have done in Egypt. And ye dwelt in the wilderness a long season. And I brought you into the land of the Amorites, which dwelt on the other side of Jordan. And they fought with you, and I gave them into your hand, that ye might possess their land. And I destroyed them from before you. Then Balak, the son of Zippor, king of Moab, arose and warned against Israel. And sent and called Balaam and the son of Beor to curse you. But I would not hearken unto Balaam. Therefore he blessed you still. So I delivered you out of his hand. And ye went over Jordan and came unto Jericho. And the men of Jericho fought against you.
Okay, yeah, all the ites. And he then delivered them into his hand. And God said, I delivered your enemies into your hand. I did it. It wasn't the children of Israel who won the victories. It was God who won them. But they had to go participate. And God used some unusual and amazing ways to deliver them. Israel's deliverance from the Amorites is just one example here in verse 12. Linda, if you could read verse 12 for us.
And I sent the hornets before you, which drave them out from before you, even them two kings of the Amorites. But not with thy sword, nor with thy
right, not with your weapons. I did it via nature. I sent the hornets. Lots of hornets. All right. God has a great sense of humor. God is very resourceful. His method of defeating the Amorites was to have hornets chase their mighty armies with their swords, their bows, their chariots, their horses off the battlefield. Advantage God. Mm-hmm. Verse 13 now, Tom.
And I have given you a land for which you did not labor, and the cities which you built not, and you dwell in them, of the vineyards and olive yards which you planted, not do you eat.
That is grace. They didn't have to work for it. They didn't have to build the city afresh. God today, you know, I mean, they just went in and there was a house. Nobody was living there anymore. They're all dead. It's your house now. And guess what? It's got a beautiful garden in the back. And there's lots of olive yards and vineyards and, you know, a moon, you know, a moonshine thing in the back. Just, it's all yours now. You didn't plant it, but it's all yours. You don't even have to pay the mortgage on it. It's gone. It's already yours. Well, that's grace. That's God today, though, has given us things that we don't deserve. Victories which we did not achieve. Christ achieved it on our behalf. Things that, from our point of view, we should never have. God just handed things to us. Now, after reviewing with the children of Israel what God had done for them, Joshua now is going to remind them of their responsibility to God. Verse 14, he says, "Now therefore fear, reverence, respect, hold in awe the Lord. Serve him in sincerity and in truth. And put away the gods which your father served on the other side of the flood in Egypt." You know, your father's maybe talking to you about those Egyptian gods. What did they do for the Egyptians? Got them all 10 plagued and destroyed in the great chariot car wash. So don't serve those gods. They're not very good gods. This tells you, though, why Joshua has to get them all together and talk to them about it, why they weren't delivered sooner. God can only deliver people when the people believe. He could not deliver them because they're still serving other gods. They wanted to hold on to their old way of life, their old habit patterns, old way of doing things. I'm kind of comfortable with these gods. No, don't be those people. Get a new God. The first command Joshua gave the people was to rid themselves of other gods. Life's spiritual. Whenever anyone has a god other than the one true God, that person's in trouble. So long as Israel was faithful and served the one true God, God delivered them. Today, you may not have an idol or a statue of a god, unless you're Roman Catholic. Then you got a little plastic statue, you know, magnetic one of Jesus you put in your car.
Dashboard Jesus.
That's right, dashboard Jesus. Right. And all that is an idol that comes from all these days and times. You still can have a god other than the one true God. Your god could be your job. Your god could be your social position, food, some hobby, anything that's more important to you than doing God's will. So I ask you, what's first in your life? What is your God? Joshua told the children of Israel to get rid of anything that stood in the way of serving the one true God. If money is still more important to you than God, you have a God. It's called money. You have to get to the place that there's only one true God in your life, and that God is the true God, and he's the only one you're going to serve. He is the one to whom you are dedicated. And then everything else in life that's secondary will just fall into place. You may have heard of Matthew 6:33 that Michelle is going to read to us. It's even in your syllabi.
"But seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you."
The only way to real success is to worship the one true God and put him first in your life. The decision to serve the one true God and no other gods was Joshua's concern in his final instructions to the children of Israel before he died. Verse 15, Joshua 24:15. "And if what I'm saying to you seems evil or seems wrong unto you to serve the Lord Jehovah, then choose you this day whom you will serve. Whether you want to serve the gods which your father served that are on the other side of the flood, and those gods weren't powerful enough to keep us from leaving Egypt, or the gods of the Amorites, in whose land you dwell, and those gods weren't powerful enough to keep us from subduing their followers and taking their land. You can serve all those false gods if you want. But as for me and my house, in bold letters, we will serve the Lord." Now, why did he have to say that? Because they were already heading in another direction. They're already starting to serve other gods that they found and came across in the land. Joshua told the people to choose. Make an honest decision whom they would serve. Jehovah had delivered them from the Egyptians and their gods. Jehovah had delivered them from the Amorites and their gods. The children of Israel could serve the other people's gods if they chose, but they also had the option of choosing to serve Jehovah, the one true God, who had delivered them over and over and over again. And we too have to make a choice. Are we really going to stand for God and His Word, or are we going to just talk about it? We must make up our minds. Joshua had made up his mind when he said with great determination, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. I know my buddy Caleb will too. With these words, Joshua set an example and a challenge for others to accept. Joshua and his house were determined to serve the Lord. The question still remained, what about the rest of you? Who are you going to serve? All right, verses 16 to 19, Luann.
And the people answered and said, God forbid that we should forsake the Lord to serve other gods. For the Lord our God, He it is that brought us up and our fathers out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage, and which did those great signs in our sight and preserved us in all the way wherein we went and among all the people through whom we passed. And the Lord drave out from before us all the people, even the Amorites which dwelt in the land. Therefore we will also serve the Lord, for He is our God. And Joshua said unto the people, you cannot serve the Lord, for He is a holy God. He is a jealous God. He will not forgive your transgressions nor your sins.
If you have any other God but the true God, then God is the true God's jealous. He's the only God. And anytime you have any other God, then you'll never truly live a more abundant life. You will never move with the things of God. You'll never have God's blessings because you're serving other gods. Many things would not have made God one bit of difference, but they were still trying to serve more than one God, and that's a big deal. God's very image conscious. Once the people voiced their decision to continue to serve Jehovah, Joshua could now give them further instructions in their walk with God. All right, you're going to serve the Lord? I'm going to serve the Lord. My family's going to serve the Lord. What about you? You're going to serve the Lord? Okay, great. Now, here's what we do. Luann, 20 to 22.
If you forsake the Lord and serve strange gods, then He will turn on you and do you hurt and consume you after that He had done you good. And the people said unto Joshua, nay, but we will serve the Lord. And Joshua said unto the people, you are witnesses against yourselves that you have chosen you, the Lord, to serve Him. And they said, we are witnesses.
So the people responded to Joshua, spoke for God, that they would be faithful to Jehovah. So Joshua responded with, you yourselves are witnesses of the promise which you have made. Idols can be a lot more than something of wood or stone. It can be idols you fashion in your mind, idols of power, idols of position. Verse 23 through 26 now, Luann.
Now therefore, put away, said he, the strange gods which are among you, and incline your heart unto the Lord God of Israel. And the people said unto Joshua, the Lord our God will we serve, and His voice will we obey. So Joshua made a covenant with the people that day, and set them a statute and an ordinance in Shechem. And Joshua wrote these words in the book of the law of God, and took a great stone, and set it up there under an oak, that was by the sanctuary of the Lord.
All right, so here's the great stone. That's kind of a lousy picture, but you can see it's a big stone set up over there. It's a little bit clearer from where I copied it out of over there. But that's a big stone. Joshua makes an agreement with the people, and he writes down a scroll. To put the covenant into writing after making an oral vow made a greater impact on the people's minds. All right, if Abby and I agree on something, we shake on it, we do a little,
pound it.
Exactly. And then we go to a lawyer and have him write it up. All right, just in case. Well, that's what he got. That's what's going on here. He's going, okay, you all orally all said you're going to obey the true God. Now, let's write it down, and it'll be a source of reference. And it'll be a reminder that you said it. The covenant or agreement was the commitment that Joshua, who's God's spokesman, had heard the people make. They said they would serve God and obey His voice. When the people were given a choice, whom would they serve? They answered Joshua in one voice, we're going to remain faithful to Jehovah. We're going to serve only Jehovah. We're not going to allow our people to marry men and women who serve other gods. We guarantee that we are going to stand for the one true God. And Joshua said, I'm getting this in writing. Joshua then wrote the commandment which Israel had made, and he took a great stone, the longest lasting and largest thing he could have used, and he built a place where all the people could see the stone. dragged that big stone up on top of a hill. This permanent marker was to be a constant reminder of their commitment to Jehovah, as witnessed by Joshua. Then Joshua took the symbol of their commitment, this great stone, and he placed it beneath an oak tree. The oak tree in the Bible symbolizes the presence of God. In Bible times, people would sit under an oak tree to pray. When a person in Eastern culture wanted to ponder or consider carefully a situation, before making a decision, they would sit under an oak tree. Thus, it was beneath an oak tree that Joshua chose to mark the children of Israel's very great and important decision to commit themselves to serve the Lord. As years went by, the stone remained. The word declares that the people were to teach the commandments then to their children and to their children's children. They would see the stone and be reminded that their forefathers had made a commitment to serve no other God but Jehovah only. This great stone was something they could see for years and years would remind them of the covenant made there at Shechem. So you can say, okay, let's grab the children. We're going to go down, because they're starting to act like teenagers. And I'm going to take them to this great stone. I'm going to show them that stone. And we're going to remind them of what that stone stands for. All right, verses 27 and 28. Becca.
And Joshua said unto all the people, behold, this stone shall be a witness unto us, for it hath heard all the words of the Lord which he spake unto us. It shall be therefore a witness unto you, lest ye deny your God. So Joshua let people depart, every man unto his inheritance.
So Joshua sent everybody back to their inherited land, which God had given them. And he allowed the people to go back so they could reap the fruit of the land which God had made available to them. As believers, we only have one life to live, unless you're Hindu. No, you still only get one life to live and to give. And we have to give our utmost for God's highest. Our commitment to serve God releases God's blessings in our lives, just as it did in the time of Joshua. We have the freedom of choice to decide this day, whom are you going to serve? And I exhort you to make the same commitment with me. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord, even if we have to go to Alaska to do it. This is the great decision around which all of our lives pivot. Commit yourself to serve God and Him only, and then teach your children and your children's children to do the same. Hold to that commitment and enjoy the inheritance provided for you by God through Christ Jesus, and declare boldly, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. And that would be something nice to put up on the wall, huh, in your house. Almost everybody's got it. The witness to Israel was that stone underneath the oak. They had heard the commitment that was there when the commitment was made. He set the stone up and said, as long as that stone is there, every time you see it underneath that oak tree, you elders, think about the commitment you made. Because if there are any strange gods that appear in your family, then it's because you, as the leader of your family, was not on top of other leaders in your family. All right, verse 29. And it came to pass after these things that Joshua, the son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, he died, 110 years old. And they buried him in the border of his inheritance. And Israel served the Lord all the days of Joshua. He served the Lord all the days of the elders that overlived Joshua, and which had known all the works of the Lord. So these were those who were teenagers at the time. They were slaves in Egypt. They were teenagers. They went through the Red Sea. They stayed 40 years in the wilderness. They had known all the works of the Lord that were done for Israel. And the bones of Joseph. Remember Moses? Joseph, when he said, before he died, carry my bones. Moses got his bones. So the bones of Joseph, which the children of Israel brought up out of Egypt, they buried in Shechem, in a parcel of ground which Jacob bought from the sons of Hamor, the father of Shechem, for 400 pieces of silver, and it became the inheritance of the children of Joseph. And Eleazar, the son of Aaron, he died. And they buried him in a hill that pertained to Phinehas, his son, which had given him in Mount Ephraim. Phinehas had already been, the last many years, acting as high priest, rather than Eleazar, who was pretty old. So Joshua died, 110 years old. Israel served the Lord all the days of Joshua, and all the days of the elders that overlived Joshua, and which had known all the works of the Lord that he had done for Israel. The bones of Joseph, which the children of Israel brought up out of Egypt, were buried in Shechem. Eleazar, the son of Aaron, dies, and now it's time for the next generation to carry on the great work of those who preceded him, and that's what we will look at after the break. Let's keep it down to 10 minutes, so then we can be eating. Yes, Richard?
On the elders,